Blog Talk Radio.
Well, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called. Speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He called everyone. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Visit StrokesNoJoke.org, brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Thank you so much for waking up this morning and listening to the show. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and we're starting a little later today at 11:30, but I have a wonderful guest today. Some of you probably already know him as a screenwriter and a playwright, a Pulitzer Prize winning screenwriter and playwright, a soldier's play. He also is known for Zoo Man and The Sign and many other productions, Brownsville, Raid, The Deepest Part of Sleep, so many plays he has written. But now he has ventured into playing with children, if I should say, by writing a book for them called Snatch, The Adventures of David and Me in Old New York. I want to welcome Charles Fuller. Good morning, Mr. Fuller.
Good morning. Good morning.
I want to read a little bit. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I want to read a little from your book, Snatch, this morning. this is from the beginning. There are people in this world so low down, I can't imagine a word rotten enough to call them. That's Snatch. He dresses up in disguises, acting friendly until the unwary fugitive lets his guard down. Then Snatch blows on his whistle, a signal for his cutthroat friends to bum rush the poor devil, toss a burlap hood over his head, shackle or tie him up, then carry him to the first boat heading south. So that's the beginning of your book there, Snatch, The Adventures of David and Me in Old New York. So tell us now, you were a playwright. What made you venture into writing a children's book?
Oh, I had promised my two sons. I have two sons, Charles and David. And I guess about a half century ago, I promised the two of them that I would write a book in which they would be the heroes, and that it would be a book built around the history of this country, and they would save somebody, or they would be instrumental in allowing or creating the situation in which the history took place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started work on it, but I had the idea a long time ago, and I started working on it, and then my career as a playwright began, and I just... Sometimes I forgot about it, and, you know, I wasn't thinking about it, and I didn't turn back to it. But every year since I promised that to them, they've asked me, when are you going to finish this book, Dad?
Oh, yeah. You know, children do not forget. When you promise them something, you know, I have a daughter, and she asks me things all the time. So, Mom, do you think that next year maybe I could do such and such? Ask me next year, honey, because... Because if I say yes now, you know, next year, Mom, last year you said such and such, you know, so. Well, you definitely did a wonderful job in reading the book. You definitely, as I mentioned to you earlier, it just took me places. And I think it's a wonderful handbook for teachers. You have a lot of great historical notes in the back of the book. And the characters' names. I mean, you have some crazy characters' names. The Roaches, the Blackbirders, Irish Mabel. Tell us about the Blackbirders and who they are in the story.
The Blackbirders were a group that I wonder if people have seen the movie The Gangs in New York. It was a movie about the lower portion of Manhattan where this book takes place. The gangs were groups of Irishmen who banded together, quite frankly, as fire companies. And their job was to pull these fire trucks across streets and have horses pull them to put out fires, because the lower part of Manhattan was largely built with wood. And so every now and then these houses would catch fire. But they developed into gangs, a series of gangs, the Roach Guards, the Blackbirders, all these people were in a sense, different groups of people from different places in Ireland. And so they had these rivalries that they brought with them to the United States. And when they got here, they continued these rivalries. They band together as firemen, and they continued to fight. and put out fires in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
Much of the early part of the 19th century.
Now, you also have in here, which many of your stories, this issue of the racial issues. In the soldiers' play, the issue of race and prejudice are brought up. You had a play about interracial marriage. Do I say you have an obsession with the issue of racial conflict, or why do you continue to speak about that? Why do you think it's important to continue to speak about that?
Because I'm always interested in defining who we are at any given time in history. And one of the things that we forget sometimes is that we are as human as everybody else in the society is. And so in this particular story, what I wanted to do was to point out that free black people operated in the city of New York before the end of slavery. And a lot of what they did was to make an attempt to save lots of fugitives from the South and runaways from the South, people who had been enslaved, who were trying to be free.
Mm-hmm.
New York was the major stop on the Underground Railroad in those days. So the job of a lot of African Americans at that time was to help other black people get away from slavery. And so what I wanted to do with the story was to point out that we were not just inactive or frightened or scared of doing certain kinds of things. And I wanted to tell young people that if you get together and plan something, you can make an effect not only on your world, but history in general.
Yes, definitely. I think it was a wonderful story in terms of unification, and I think a lot of children, like you, may not be aware that there were these free blacks in New York, but yet and still, they still had to fight for their freedom, because that's
exactly
part of the story in your, you know, is
right.
That these bands of Irishmen and people were going around grabbing free black people.
Right.
So just because you got north, you know, I mean, when I was in school, I remember learning, well, as long as they got north, as long as the black people got north, they're free. But your story shows clearly that is not the case. And what also comes up in your story, similar to a soldier's play, is that another black person was helping the white man capture them. Talk about that a little bit.
That's true. During that period of time, they had a group called the New York Kidnapping Club. It was run by two men, two white guys at the time. But they also had a man by the name of David Holliday, who came from, I believe, Alabama. And once he got to New York, he managed to figure out that he could make money if he pointed out people who were fugitives and runaways. So he worked with this group of people whose job it was to make money, quite frankly, and to help these owners in the South who came north to find their slaves that had escaped. And he worked in this for a long time. But what he did was he disguised himself. And people at the time wanted to find out who he was. And so there was a man by the name of David Rubbles who spent a great deal of time trying to unmask David Holliday and point him out to everybody, all the free black people that were living in Five Points at the time. And so he was a real person. I have no idea what happened to him after this particular period in the story. But I do know that it was real, and that people all over New York, at least in Five Points, where most of the black people lived, were looking for him and trying to find out who he was, the one that was pointing out all these people who were fugitives and runaways.
Yes, yes. Now, one of the things you also bring up, again, it's just a rich story with so many historical notes in there. Let me read a little part from the chapter 7 of your book. It says, from September to Christmas is the busiest time of the year for the chimney sweep profession. The next 4 days, David and me barely had time to eat, much less talk. We would come home exhausted and after eating supper, go right to bed. Then Dad would get us up at 6, and as soon as we dressed, we'd be out the door again carrying ladder, brushes, and lunch pails. I read that part because chimney sweep was one of the few professions that a free black man could have, yes?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So, I mean, it was hard work every day.
Yes, it was. It was very hard work. We did most of the dirty work in New York at the time. When people had to clean out the sewers, the black people could do those jobs. And we were the people who cleaned the chimneys. We did the hard work that was there, but we did it as free people. and mm-hmm. paid for our work. There were black chefs, there were black hairdressers, there were black dressmakers, there were a variety of people that lived in New York and in other cities in the north at the time, who were free and were able to provide a lifestyle for their families. But the major job of black men in New York City at the time was as chimney sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
Every house had a chimney, and so these guys were available to clean the chimneys during the period from September to Christmas, really, before
yeah.
the winter settled on the city of New York.
Now, you have a kind of gruesome scene in here, too, Mr. Fuller. Let me read another part here from the book. It says, the spectators were in stitches, laughing until a dark gray brown-nosed rat, nearly the size of a large kitten, bit the dog on the side, and the animal let out an awful yowl. Now,
yes.
This is something that in the historical notes in the back you talk about. Dog and rat fights?
Yes.
I mean, I was reading and I was like, a dog fighting a rat? But now I have seen some large rats underground in the sewers, okay?
One of the sports of the time was to take a fox terrier and put him in a ring, put the dog in a ring, and throw rats into the ring, and to bet on how many rats the dog could kill in a period of time, for example, 5 minutes, or people would bet on that. That was a sport in the time. And they would pay kids a penny a rat. If they could catch the rats, they'd get a penny a rat. Depending on the size of the rat, they might get 2 cents. But that was part of the sport during the 19th century. And it had been a sport largely all over the United States at that time.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I didn't read the whole thing yet, but he gets a little more graphic in there. But I think in terms from it'll be okay for a child. Now, who do you think who's going to pick up the book? I think it's aimed toward little boys. Do you think girls will be interested in this? I mean, there are some girl characters.
I hope girls read it because there are girls in it, and they have a major part in the outcome of the story.
Yes.
Certainly, we need to see stories in which our kids decide their future by their activities. And one of the reasons I wanted to write this story was precisely that. So there are girls, and I hope girls read it. I hope boys read it. But I also hope adults read it to their children. Because I read a portion of it to my granddaughter, and once she heard the name Pickles the Killer, she was enraptured. She says, oh, God.
Oh yeah. Well, that brings me back to all the names you have in here. I mean, you have wonderful character names, you know, like, you know, Irish Mabel and Dirty Ida, and the teacher's name. Who's the teacher? One of their teachers in there. He has like a six-word name, Mr. Bowman.
Switch.
Yes. Yeah, hit you with a switch. I mean, that was wonderful. And, I mean, I will tell you, I was in theater before I was here on radio, and so I was visualizing a set. You know, I was visualizing a set, you know, with the old brewery in one part and the tunnels. There are scenes with the wonderful tunnel scenes where you feel a little claustrophobic in there. There's a scene where the boys kind of are stuck trying to hide from some slave catchers in the tunnel, you know. And then talking about theater, I mentioned to you earlier, the women characters, you have the three brewery witches.
Yeah.
Made me remember, think about Macbeth.
Well, I think you draw on a lot of things from your life, and they very well could have come out of unconscious idea connected to the theater, and certainly to Shakespeare, whom I've read all his plays. So it could have come out of that. There's a group in the book called the Magus, which are for young boys who are also witches as well. But I would not doubt that for one second, that the name of those girls came out of that whole connection that I have with the theater and with the work of Shakespeare. I hope that girls will pick this up and enjoy it as much as boys will. Because it also suggests that they have an active part to play in what goes on in the world around them. the book also connects black people and white people at the time. And in the area of Five Points, blacks and whites lived together. It was kind of itchy for both of them, but they managed to live together there and connect to one another, because Five Points at that time was the poorest place in New York City, and most of the black people in New York City lived in that neighborhood. And most of the poor Irish people lived in that neighborhood as well.
Well, you know, the Irish were, yeah, the Irish are historically on the bottom of the, I guess you want to say the Caucasian ladder, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
They were looked down upon as well, you know, so it's not, at the time. Now, you have an interesting character in here. I don't know if I should, the fugitive, or who they think is the fugitive.
Well, we won't talk about him.
We won't talk about that. Okay, we won't talk about that. All right, we won't talk about that. But let's talk about education, though, because, like I said, the book has a lot of historical notes in there. But in your book, you talk about the free schools that the Negroes had.
Yes.
Tell me about that, the ability to have those schools and send their children to school.
Yeah, at the time, they were called the free colored schools, colored free schools. They operated in the city of New York prior to 1838. About 1835, the city of New York decided to take over that school system in which blacks had sent their children to school. And so the New York City took over the schools, and it then became public schools. But prior to that time, African Americans sent their kids to school. It was expensive. Given them the amount of money they had to pay.
A lot
of our people sent their kids to school and wanted them to get an education very early on. And one of the major parts of this story is that our kids loved school and wanted to go to school. They didn't want to be home. They didn't want to sit around and do nothing. They wanted to go to school. At the time, the Quakers set up what was called the Colored Asylum. And what they did was they took poor kids whose mothers or fathers had died or whose fathers had walked away and took them and educated them in this.
Well, I think that's an important issue that you bring up. That's an important issue about the kids enjoy going to school. You know, we have like almost a 50% dropout rate here in Philadelphia. I want to mention to the audience, Mr. Fuller's from Philadelphia, I'm from Philadelphia. What do we need to do about that? What can we do about that? Reading to our children, what else can we do to help teach kids to stay in school? What can we do?
Well, I was told from the time I was a little kid that I was going to go to college. And this is, we're talking 100 million years ago, okay? my mother told me just about every other week, you're going to college. Before I even knew what college was, I tell my granddaughters, how are my two college kids? How are you girls doing? I know you're going to be great when you go to college. They don't know what college is. They're 5 and 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I consistently talk to them about higher education. I tell them every time I see them, Granddad, they say, well, what is college? And I try to explain to them. Understand. But it's something you have to be devoted to doing all the time. You must make education more important than everything else that the child is doing.
Well, if they don't see examples, you know, people always say, well, you know, we're living in certain areas, we don't see examples of successful college-educated African-Americans. But now we have a president that's African-American. So do we have any more excuses now?
Well, you know something, I used to be told in the neighborhood that I lived at 27th and Montgomery, and the guys that stood on the corner would tell me the only college guys I know are mopping floors and cleaning toilets, Charlie. So you don't need to go to college. but what I would say to them is, if you don't have a job, how do you know somebody that works? If you never worked at all, where did you meet somebody that works even in the toilets?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to not pay attention to certain kinds of things. And at the time that I went to college, I was the first young man in my neighborhood to go to college. So I don't think you necessarily need to see other people who go to college. your family and the people around you need to convince you that that's the way to improve and to end the kinds of struggles that make life so difficult for African Americans where they live.
Yeah.
I think that's what my parents did for me.
I think that's very important. Starting young, definitely picking up Mr. Fuller's book, Snatch, The Adventures of David and Me in Old New York, will be coming out shortly. June 2nd is
June
coming
the,
out?
Yes.
June
2nd.
So,
June the 2nd, yes.
So you'll be able to get his book in the stores. The issue, though, also that we struggle with as African Americans is the intra-hate, the internal hate of we're selling out each other. How do we deal with that now? I mean, you know, like you said, you were born several years ago, we'll say.
and
you know, we have a lot of people, a lot of kids today feel like, well, there is no racism. You know, I have Asian friends. I have Korean friends. I have, you know, Irish, German. And a lot of kids are, you know, going to school with, you know, a mixed. How do we, but there's still issues. People are still called nigger. People are still not given a job. People are still have the door slammed in their face. How do we deal with helping each other and uniting to get to the next level?
Well, at least from the point of view of a writer, I think we need to more and more explain to ourselves who we are and to begin to understand that a lot of who we are came from on our own initiative, that we were not always acting in a way that was fearful or frightened. We took chances. We did things that had to be done because we couldn't continue to live in the circumstances that we found ourselves in. And I think part of changing all that is an initiative on the part of the young people in our country to suddenly say, wait a minute, stop this. We are not going to permit this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you have to stand there and take this and put up with this, to me, seems rather old-fashioned and if nothing
mm-hmm.
else. Pre-20th century.
Right.
We really have to begin to start saying, no, I'm not gonna take this from you anymore. And we're in a much better situation to say that now than we ever were in the past. So we need to start thinking that we are in control of our fate and act like it more often than we do.
Yes. Now, one of the things you also mentioned in the book is a marriage between an African-American man and a woman, and that is something that's really a highlight in the media these days, the lack of black marriages, the height of the number of single mothers. Do you think that developing strong, emotional bonds is important to help us as a people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, sure. I mean, there's nothing like a family to take care of you. I mean, let's face it. There's nothing like a family. That's the first step that you take. Is with your family, and fathers and mothers act on their children in a way that's very, very positive. So I am not one that's going to put down people who don't have husbands or husbands who don't have wives,
mm-hmm.
but it is an important part of how we move forward, and we ought to start thinking about that and making every effort we can to preserve those kinds of fabrics that we need as a people to move forward.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a family to come home to, for example.
Mm-hmm. And that's important in your story. You talk about the mother and the father. The mother was a slave. The father helped. And
mm-hmm.
also the issue of the greater family, the community. They had the Vigilance
yeah.
Committee.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. That's important, I think, the greater
yeah.
community.
The Vigilance Committee was a group actually that existed at the time whose job it was to make sure that no free people got shanghaied or kidnapped, and that fugitives and runaways could be protected. And this was a group of largely black people. In fact, almost 99% of the group was black people who made sure that people that were living in the area and fugitives that came into the area were able to escape slavery. Slavery
mm-hmm.
was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And most black people, indeed, I would say all but a few, wanted to escape the horror of slavery. So
mm.
it wasn't a wonderful thing. It wasn't a nice thing. It wasn't.
Yeah, let's not romanticize about it, you know.
No,
sitting on the bay with our banjo or something. Yeah.
American slavery was horrible.
It's horrible, definitely. Now, you're working on some new things here, The American Story, a new play commissioned by Cherry Lane Theater in New York. Talk about that a little bit.
It's a play about the vicissitudes, the difficulties of basketball for our young people. It should be hopefully an eye-opening story about how a family reacts to being drafted in the NBA.
You won't tell us more. But that's a big thing for young black males.
Yeah,
basketball, football, and they're really striving that they see that the only outlet out of, say, poverty for them is to get into basketball or football. But there are other alternatives.
The thing that I find so interesting is that I read a statistic not long ago that there are only 454 professional basketball players in the United States. So we're talking
look at
about
there.
We're talking about a 30 million population in this country in which families are hoping that their young man can get into a group of 454 professional players. It seems to me that the chances of becoming a master physicist is greater than that. The chance of becoming president is greater than that.
Look at there, becoming president. And now they can become president because we have an example. You can't say, you know,
right,
definitely.
Right.
Well, sir, Mr. Fuller, I want to let you know we only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
But I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
I really enjoy reading your book. Everyone who's listening, please pick up after June 2nd, Snatch, The Adventures of David and Me in Old New York, not just for your sons, but also for your daughters. And please read it to them and share it with their teachers because there are wonderful notes in the back, and I could see a paper being written. I know that the kids are probably screaming, oh, no, homework. But I could definitely
see
it.
I want to point out, you have a teacher's guide that goes along with the book, too, by the way.
Yes, a teacher's guide. So please pick this up. Again, thank you so much, Mr. Fuller, for coming on this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, please stay in touch. Okay, bye-bye. I want to thank everyone this morning for listening to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. You can follow me on twitter.com/Joy Keyes. You can also become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. And stay tuned next Saturday, 11 a.m., May 22nd. We're going to be talking about African-American marriages. And just to let you know, there are some very happy marriages out there, and I have some wonderful guests coming on next week. Lamar Tyler, he produced and directed two movies about black marriages, You Saved Me and Happily Ever After. Also a clinical psychologist, Dr. Perot, Nisa Muhammad, who is the founder of Black Marriage Day, and Malik Haynes, who started modernmarriage.com. So please tune in next Saturday, May 22nd at 11 a.m. Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget to mark the show as a favorite. You can mark the show as a favorite. You can also leave comments about the show. And you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday, and I hope you enjoyed the show today with Mr. Charles Fuller. Please pick up his book, Snatch, The Adventures of David and Me in Old New York. Have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you so much.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.